the guys from Ping, they've kind of shown me how much the equipment matters.
I just love that I can hit any shot I kind of want.
We're going to be able to tell some fun stories about what goes on here to help golfers play better golf.
Welcome back to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast. Shane Vaik and Marty Jurtson, and we are in the Ping Tour truck, which means we're with a man that spends a lot of time in this truck, Kenton Oates. Kenton, how many weeks a year are you involved in this truck out on tour?
Probably 30-ish weeks a year on this trailer.
I mean, do you know every inch of this place? Like, did you find anything in 2 seconds?
No, I couldn't. There's a lot of drawers back there that I don't open, and there's a lot of stuff that you can find. I'm pretty good, but I don't know. I don't know everything yet.
So what? People see these trucks every week. They see all the tour trucks from different brands, and they show up. What's the schedule like? What day do you get to a tournament? Yeah. What day do you leave to go on to the next place?
Yeah. So in my role, I'm leaving on Sunday. Hopefully Sunday evening. Spend as much time as I can with my family on Sunday, and then we're leaving, 5 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday. So that's for me, that's what I'm doing. That's what Spencer is doing as well. And then Jack and Adam, the other two guys on my team, they're either flying in on that same schedule, or this thing doesn't just, magically appear. It's got to drive. So from this week, it'll roll down to Dallas, and it'll take 2 or 3 days to do that. So Jack will do that, and then he'll just be out on the road like that. So
hey, give a little overview of what all the equipment is on the truck. What do we got here? Not only club building stuff, how much does the truck weigh? What does it take to drive this thing?
63,000 pounds.
of grinding, of grips, of club
hats. I feel like there's got to be $2,000 of that in hats, or there's a lot of hats on this thing.
So when players come here, are the players coming here or caddies coming in to get stuff fixed? Is it a mix of both?
Yeah.
What do you think the percentage is of players maybe versus someone on their team coming in to get something tweaked?
I would say it's about 50-50. And a lot of it is, if it's players, it's usually from a text that we sent out. Players' presence on the trailer is really driven by how close we are to the driving range. If we're close to the range, they're coming in all the time, grabbing snacks, hanging out, doing that. There's some events where we're like Phoenix, we're miles away, so they won't be there in as much, but they'll shoot us a text and then they'll send their caddy
and to do that.
So how long does it take to build? Let's say you're building a new 5-wood for a player for the week. I mean, what's that process look like? How long does it take?
A fairway wood, if everyone is if we got Jack, Adam, Spencer, myself, everyone's hands on deck, one fairway wood could take, it's got a cure, so 15 minutes max.
Wow.
15 minutes.
If a player lost their clubs and we had nothing else to do, and press for time, we could do it under an hour, all 14.
You could do a set of clubs in front of an hour.
We could do it probably 45 minutes to an hour, pending the model of the iron.
Yeah.
That's the biggest pending.
Which player is the most involved in the tweaks that maybe has the most personal assistance to what they want done to their golf clubs, to their bag, week to week?
That's a great question. Tyrrell Hatton, whenever he does something to his clubs, he is always present.
And Tyrrell was here earlier
exactly,
today with a couple of putter grips on, right?
So he's not going to regrip anything without his press. He's not going to move a loft or lie without him there. He wants to see it, look at it, be a part of the process, where some other guys are like, oh yeah, bend my club 2 degrees.
Has any player ever literally regripped their own club or bent the loft and lie themselves, or not yet?
Jack, has anyone ever regripped their own clubs in here? There's no way. No way.
You've never seen a player in here regripping their own stuff?
No chance.
Any requests?
Anybody ever said, I like to regrip my own clubs?
No, but we have had John Daly grind.
Yes.
John Daly grinded
John
his
Daly,
own.
PJ,
John Daly grinded his own crossover.
Yeah.
PGA Championship, and the crossover is hollow. I was worried he was just going to keep going on the sole, and there's a hole. I was like, well, this could go bad.
I feel like that's that mix, Marty, of the kind of the younger generation maybe versus some of the older players is, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you grinded your own clubs and you probably regripped a lot of your own clubs. And now obviously collegiately and even in junior programs, somebody is going to be doing that for a lot of these players.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because even from driver fitting aspects, I remember with Westwood and Bubba and older guys, they were always when their driver cracked, it was oh my gosh, this could take an all day.
Yeah.
He could be done. This is it. But Sahith Theegala breaks his driver. He's like, okay, just build me another one. It's fine.
Yeah,
I'll be fine. They have you bring out the track, man. You're ready to go. He's like, oh no, bro, I'm just gonna go to the course. It's fine.
I trust you.
Yeah, correct.
Which is an important part of the relationship, though, Kenton,
is
the trust in what we're doing with our equipment, making sure it's spec'd out perfectly. And there is a level of perfection that you guys obviously abide by to make sure that when you give them a new club, they can be confident in what you guys just did to it.
For sure. That's one of our, I think, one of the best parts about our driver. We make a great driver. the first time, we make the same driver the second time, and that's not easy to do, and we do a very good job of that.
So what are some things that go into that?
So Jack has a spec sheet that he does that it's every player has their own Excel file, and like on a driver, we got length, loft, setting, tipping of the shaft, swing weight, head weight, gi location.
Yep.
So that's CG shifter location. So yeah, that's everything's shifter. On there.
Yeah.
And that's for every club, and that's every for every player, and you got everything. So you were talking about texting with players. I mean, is that basically the system now? I mean, in modern society, they're sending you a text saying, I want a different grind on this wedge, or yeah. I would get like a different grip on my putter, things like that.
So Sunday night, it's really easy. You're on a plane, you're now working. Spencer and I will send out texts to the guys on our staff. We'll divide it up, send the text out, get the text back, and then you're ready to roll Monday morning. So Monday mornings, we're doing a lot of like...
Is that the busiest part, Mondays?
Either Monday mornings are like probably Jack and Adam's busiest part, because we'll get a lot of like, hey, I want fresh wedges, I'm going to do new grips. And then Tuesday is probably the most active day on the range if players do want to do active like fitting or testing throughout the week.
Okay, well, what's like an example of the smallest little change to like a club you've made for a player? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, I'm thinking like you need to get just 100 RPMs more spin or a quarter degree of loft or something like that.
We do that a lot with drivers, actually. Like the driver fitting, because I think we're so precise in how we build them,
yeah.
We have a really, like if you're playing 9.5 degrees that week, obviously this thing rolls down the road. So we kind of always look at our gauges as a week to week basis too. Like his driver's 9.5 today and we're going to base it off that. And it's like spinning at 2,700 and they want to spin at 2,500. We'll definitely build a head like at 9.5. And like, which is pretty cool to see when you bring it out. And it's like Corey Connors before Valero, he's like, my driver is just under spinning just a little bit. And it was like, whatever it is, let's call it 9. We brought out like 9.2,
yeah.
Spins 200 more RPMs, yeah. And then he wins. So, it's pretty cool when stuff like that happens.
A player like Corey's like, it's under spinning. What does he see on the course? Like, what's the problem with that?
I think most players, when they're saying it's under spinning, especially a guy like Corey who hits it so straight, he's not so much seeing the fact that he's hitting bad shots. They start to feel like a little anxiety and out of control on the ever so slight misses that start to tail to the right. That's the biggest. Guys will see spin and right misses go together, and that freaks some guys out.
Yeah.
It's like they're supposed to live at 25. They start to see when it dips at 2,000. The good ones are still fine, but that slight miss is now like Corey's a drawer too, so it's not drawing, and he's like, this is not drawing.
Yeah.
I have problems.
So the everyday golfer, they go in and get fit for their driver, yep. And their window spin might be like, you know, 400 RPM.
For sure.
You know, they hit 10 good shots. So it's going to be up and down 300, 400. Who's like got the tightest spin range, spin consistency on a driver out here?
Corey. Corey's is so good. I don't know if it's because he's a drawer, so the face is, it's just really locked into his path. But like Corey, when he gets locked in, like he's swinging really good right now. It's 23 to 2400 and it's curved
every single swing.
Every time.
That's crazy. Incredible.
Every time.
Yeah.
You know, there was stories of like Tiger back in the day and Vijay changing wedges week to week.
Yeah.
And I know Vijay Singh was a big wedge, different wedge every week. Is there somebody that you guys work with that changes wedges that much or even close to that much?
Yeah. Hovland and Taylor Moore, I would say they go through 60 degrees every two tournaments.
Two tournaments.
Every two tournaments, they go through a 60 degree. And most guys have now, the middle wedges, guys have like embraced the fact that like my 50 and 54, 56, whatever they may play, is actually maybe a little better as time goes on. So they'll let those kind of just decay a little bit, and now the ball's not, from 140, it's stopping and not coming all the way back. But 60 degrees, like, yeah, Taylor I know does a lot, and Hovland does a lot.
Are wedges the most consistent club that you guys work on week to week?
Wedges and regrips are probably the things that we do every single week. Like Seamus Power, he uses a lot of wedges too. And when he does wedges, he does them all. So he does every single loft, and he does wedges probably 2 to 3 tournaments. And he does grips 2 to 3 tournaments.
I was going to ask about grips. Is that what do you think is maybe, I would say, the average in terms of how long a player is going to use a grip?
3 tournaments.
That's it.
Really? 3 tournaments.
A month. Because then you got to realize they're probably taking a week off in there, right? So it's not like if they played 3 in a row and then take a week off and then they come out, that's 5 weeks to them, 3 tournaments. Three a month is about
Shame.
What they use.
I'm not going to feel as guilty. I change my grips twice a year.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is the thing, Marty, that I feel like I focus the most on is the thing that I'm the most obsessed with is new gloves, new grips.
Yeah.
And I'm maybe twice a year. So now I feel way better. I don't think I'm wasting nearly as many
I'm going
grips.
To once a quarter now.
Yeah, correct. And they get new gloves every week. So
every week. I mean, you can tell.
We've talked about that.
You can see that. As I've said about golfers, there's no feeling better than the new glove.
Oh,
the new glove on the first tee is a pretty epic situation. Yeah.
So, KO, we talked about driver spin, underspinning, find that right window. What about irons, man? Because the everyday golfers out there, they might be getting fit at indoor plays. Yep. Their irons are spinning low. They're going far. It looks all good. But what you know, I know you guys work a ton with your players on, like, if an iron is not spinning enough, what are the players seeing? What are they struggling with? What? How do you find the right window you need to get it into?
That's a great question. I think something that's really not so much misunderstood, but there's a lot more to an iron spin rate than Corey Connors spins his 7-iron at 6,200. Yeah. And Tony Finau spins his 7-iron at 6,700.
Yeah.
Is Tony's better than Corey? So I think the things you got to look at is we look a lot at landing angle and peak height. And we're trying to get 50 degrees of landing angle and over 105 feet of height. If you can do both of those things, you can stop the ball on most PGA Tour greens.
Okay.
That's a good recipe. The guys that come from, and we see it a lot from guys that come from Korn Ferry. Korn Ferry, the courses are a little bit shorter. They're softer. You can kind of, guys come in, they hit lower shots. And then they're like, they get to Bay Hill and they're like, I just hit a 7-iron. I hit the green and I was really close to like out of bounds. Yeah, like what happened here? I go, yeah, they're really firm out here. So you have to kind of talk through that process. And sometimes that guy's 7-iron didn't spin anymore. Like he's still, but we were able to increase height with a shaft change or just adding some loft or adding some other things in there. But sometimes 62, it can be low spin and still have enough stopping power, or it could be high spin. If you launch it too low, it's still going to come down low. So we're really looking at how the ball is coming down and then going out on the course and trying to see like, okay, I'm going to stand on the green. You're going to hit a pitching wedge and I'm going to tell you where this pitched and we're going to make sure it stops.
Yeah. So what are the levers you pull on to, let's say you needed to increase spin for a player. Like what would those levers be? You know, loft, length?
Loft would be the first.
Okay.
We'd be like, hey, are you okay if we just bend them weak?
Yep.
And then those gaps, we'll talk about what that's going to happen to your gaps. If they're playing a blueprint or a smaller model, we'll be like, can you look at something different with a I-59 or with a 230? Can you look at that?
Yep.
And a lot of the times that conversation ends in no in my 7-iron, but yes in my 4, 5, and 6, that's right? Right? Like they'll, and that's where the problem really lies is the, you know, most professional golfers, 7, 8, 9 irons, they can stop them. 4, 5, 6, it becomes a little.
Yeah.
And then length is something we'll go at as well. If it's standard length, just add a, and that's another thing in long irons. Add a 1/4 inch to your 4-iron, leave the loft the same, you get a little more ball speed, you get 200 or 300 more RPMs, and then you're, that peak height will go up like that 8. So it really is a lot. Now that you say it's really a lot of massaging that long iron, that 4, 5, 6 iron range.
This is pretty cool, KO, because I mean, a big thing I feel like my role has been is to take, hey man, all these little nuanced things that you guys do with the tour players, how do we give them to the everyday golfer?
Right.
So like, you know, our G series irons, our distance irons, we progress the lengths longer and it matches exactly what you guys are doing.
In the longer irons, right? The longer irons are getting longer.
The longer irons get a little longer. So you get a little more club speed. You get a little more dynamic loft.
Yeah.
Combine both. You get a little more ball speed. You combine all both those. Send that ball up in the air a little bit more.
Yeah, that's one thing you guys don't really, they don't see it, right? When you say it, they get it. But if you just take all the same launch conditions and add 5 miles of ball speed, you're gaining 4 or 5 feet of peak height. And guys, they don't really, once you say it to them, they're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But they don't see that. So just that little length, or then, like with a 4-iron, you can add the length and keep the loft if they just want the height, or if they're like, hey, I got to gap this to my 7-wood or my hybrid, add the length and then de-loft it, and now you have the same peak height and you gain 5-6 yards.
Yeah. So.
What's the weirdest request you've had in this truck over the years?
Oh my gosh.
Maybe a club being built or something you guys don't even build. What's been one of the stranger requests you've received? You don't have to name a player, just in terms of the club. So you can name a player.
One of the weirdest things that ever happened was my rookie year on tour. We had a staff player bend his irons from, he played black color code to like silver color code.
So give that to context to the
so
people
they went out from standard color code to 4 degrees upright.
Okay.
And this gentleman is 5'7".
What happened?
So
how was the week?
Not great. So it was at Pebble, we asked him, it was like, so number one is 9-iron broke like in competition. We got a text from the caddy. He's like, we just bent them all upright. I'm like, oh, well, this hosel broke. We asked him the next week at Riviera. He came in. He's like, I'm sorry, guys. I was wrong. Yeah, we got to go back. Whatever. No problem. We'll start over. And Christian was running the tour at that time. And he's like, when did you know this was a bad idea? It's 4 degrees upright, Pebble Beach. He's like, I was pretty sure early, but on the 10th hole, when I had the ball below my feet and I didn't know how I was going to, he's like, I didn't know how I was going to hit it. He goes, I knew it was bad. And then he asked me on the range, or this is my first year. I wish I would have been more seasoned. I probably would have like tried to stop it. But I was just like, he was into it. I'm like, oh, this is what we're doing. He's like, what would I see if they're two upright? And I go, I was like, well, you'd probably see some thin contact. Your solid shots are going to just like start left, go left maybe, or just like pulls. And like, I'm like, you might have excessive heel contact. Because I didn't want to say, I'm not telling a guy, you're shank. Shank.
Right.
Seventh hole Pebble Beach, shot tracker. Bam.
No way.
Middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Right on the ocean.
I was like, well.
So you're saying when you first started, you maybe didn't feel comfortable telling a tour player that this isn't a great idea. Right. Are you in a place now where if those requests come your way, you feel comfortable enough to say, I don't think this is going to be a great move for you? Or do you still kind of keep all the players at arm's length?
Pending the player, it's obviously different. Your relationship's right. Different. One of the greatest things about ping is, I mean, I'm going to miss someone when I do this, but Sahith Theegala, Stefan Jaeger, Harris English, Cameron Champ, Taylor Moore.
These guys Corey. I mean, these Connors, guys are so great.
Yep. These guys were on our range at 15 years old. Yep. Like, I mean, that's – so and I've been blessed to be able to be a part of the tour department. Before this, I helped out Scott Sullivan in that role with those players. So when you've had that relationship when they were kids, you can be like, okay, bud, what are we doing? Like, talk me through this. You're gonna have to convince me that this is a decent idea before we go. So pending the relationship, yes. Like, he would have not been to Zion.
Talk him off the ledge. Yeah. By the way, I mean, there's a lot of activity going around here. Is this like the nap? Is this like nap area here?
This could be nap area. Okay. You definitely could.
You can catch a snooze right here, here on the couch.
Because
you got work over here. This feels a little bit more like the laid back section.
We got a couple guys on the team. You know, might sneak in a nap on the down low.
Happens in the media center too. Just don't think it only happens in here. There are some snooze spots there as well.
So KO, name a player that's like super technical in terms of their numbers. Like they know all their TrackMan numbers, and then name someone the opposite.
That doesn't know anything.
They're all field, they just eyeball it, see a window, whatever.
Yep. Player that's super technical TrackMan. Hovland.
Okay.
Hovland knows his numbers.
He knows his carry numbers of his golf club. He knows like when I'm swinging good, my path is to this. Okay. He knows all of it. Like, and he's working off of like, if his swing goes off, he's not only looking at video, he's going back and looking at TrackMan data to try to correct the golf swing.
So it's funny you say that. I was on the range, I was on the chipping green with him last night,
yep.
And we had TrackMan out hitting an 8 yard. He was carrying the chip 8 yards and measuring all the spins.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's okay. So he's into it.
So like, I mean, Marty, when you see that, and I mean, obviously he's a young player and TrackMan has been in Victor's life probably since he was a junior golfer.
Yeah.
When you see that as somebody that's a little bit older, is it shocking to see it? Or is it just where golf is going?
I think it's where golf is going. And it still is. He's just using it to incentivize his learning, right? It's just improving the feedback loop. Like, he can see what's going on. He can feel it. If the chip slips, he could feel it. But he's just getting that faster feedback mechanism.
It's like, why not use it? Well, I mean, I battle with this in my own golf game right now. I'm like lasering short shots.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, I'm still trying to find the cutoff. Because, like, you know, you'll have a caddy. Like, I was just on a golf trip a couple weeks ago. And you have a caddy and he shoots 34 yards.
Yeah.
And when I don't want to know.
You're like, well.
Like, I just want to see it, right?
What do I do
what
now?
What is the cutoff for you?
Well, I mean, I think somewhere in the 30s is not good.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to know 30s. I think you can shoot me a 40 number, but I don't want to know 34. Let me tell you, when he told me 34 yards, guys, the shot didn't end up where I wanted it to. So
I mean, when do you go to the half yard? When do you need to know?
I never need to know a half yard. I'm not good enough to know a half yard. But, you know, it's just so interesting. Is there somebody that knows little about their numbers, that doesn't care about their numbers in the sense of it's not on their brain?
Yeah, we have Stefan Jaeger. He's not a big number guy. And when he talks to his coach, Josh Gregory, some of their interactions are my favorite. Like, like with driver, he's just like, I just want to hit hard. And like, I want to hit hard and make sure it falls to the right. And like,
he's like Ricky Bobby of golf.
TrackMan could say anything. And Jaeger's like, I don't care what it looks like. I don't want to see a video. I just want to hit hard and have it fall to the right.
Yeah.
And then Sahith isn't a big number guy. And his feel, he is such a feel player that like there's days like he uses a quad just to, you know his carry yardages. But there's days where like he'll be like, oh man, my 8-iron's only going 160. And then I remember John Deere last summer. He's like, KO, my 8-iron's going 195. And he's like, he doesn't know why it's happening. And Sahith is probably our most feel player.
Okay.
Yeah
he's just amazing. Hands for days, hitting so long. Like, well, you're hitting so many different shots.
Yeah.
Well,
and this has to be such a difficult part of you guys' job here in the truck is it's not just technology. It's personality-based as well, where you have to understand, and again, this is part of the experience. When you're a rookie, you maybe don't understand this nearly as much as you do if you've been doing this for a few years, but your job is not only to hand a player the perfect club for what they're trying to do, but understand how much information they need to know when you give them that golf.
Yeah, correct. I always say when people come and talk and ask me, like, what makes a good tour rep? I think the biggest thing, I look at my job as like, I'm trying to earn credit with all my staff players, right? I'm trying to take in as much credit as I can, go put their hats in their locker, go help them do this, try to help them out with their 7-iron or their driver here and there. And the more credit I can earn, then that gives me that time frame when I really need to step in and be like, listen, let's sit down and talk about this. They're going to maybe listen to me a little more because I've earned some value throughout this whole year. So that's how I look at it. And you're totally right. It's a personal relationship with every guy, and people are all different. So
Yeah, that's a great point. So, hey, let's turn it to the everyday golfer, right? And it's like maybe you don't think about this that much, but what advice could the everyday golfer take from what you, how you fit and take care of the tour player? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What should they focus on? If they go to a fitting,
right,
what should they be focusing on that they might not be, or hearing in some marketing stuff that, you know, is not really like the tour player to score their best, play their best, the nuts and bolts of what you're working with?
I think the number one thing is I would encourage all amateur golfers, if you're going to err in your fitting of any club in the bag, err on the high side of spin. I think it's driven by market. I don't know what's driven it, but it feels like everyone's like, oh, I got fit for my driver. I spin at 1900.
Right,
well, that's great on the one shot the day you hit good.
Yeah.
So I would say it, even like on, it just makes the club more perceived. If the playability is perceivably higher and plays higher, the ball won't curve as much.
Yeah.
So I would say,
because that almost feels counterintuitive about what a person would think is, correct, I want the numbers to be low, and you're saying err the number high.
Just err, like if it's close, just err on the one that spins a little bit more, because the box in front of you at wherever you are might say it went farther, but it's not, I promise you, it doesn't go that much farther on in real life, and it really will save you for like your consistency of your scores if you can have a little more spin with every club in your bag.
Yeah. One of the other things, KO, that we have the luxury to do out here on tour is you fit a player on the range.
Yep.
Then quite often it's like, hey, let's go play it on the course. Either you're either playing 9 holes, you walk within 3 holes. How can the everyday golfer maybe simulate that in their fitting when they can't go out and play it on the range?
Correct. That's a great question. If they're outside, I think they have a great opportunity where, like, hit your driver and then take a step to another stall and hit a 7-iron at a different window. And then even if you want, go walk over and hit a putt.
Yeah.
And then come back 5 minutes later, hit that driver again. Because then you're not getting the – we get into this bad habit out here where we're hitting drivers. We've hit 15 in a row.
Yeah,
well, he's the best player in the world. I could have given him anything. He would have probably been hitting it good by now.
Yep.
So that would be what I would say is take some time in between your stuff and just make sure that you're giving you that break, hit a different club, try to simulate playing golf, because if you get into a groove, even the everyday golfer is going to start to figure out what they want to do with it.
Yeah. So we like to call that game-like fitting.
Yeah.
You kind of gamify it a little bit. One of the other things I think I see you guys do a great job with is you have your player hit the shots they're going to hit on the course.
Yes, that's
it's
a good
not
point.
Just stock shot.
No.
So what would that look like either on wedges or irons? Like, what do you kind of run the player through
really
for making a change?
Really making sure, like, because most players have their stock shot, right? And that's just what they're going to hit. That's what they're going to give you out of the gate for a long time.
Yeah.
And then you're just going to talk through what club they're hitting and, like, what are your specialty shots? Like, is there anything, like, under the gun you have to have, and that's usually bringing the height down or the height up. They'll hit those. Wedges, it's really important in that like 30 to 70 yard window, what is their technique like? How hard are they going at those? Because then we have some guys that play their wedges, they're 60 degrees, extremely flat, because they're like, I'm not using this outside 50 yards.
Yeah.
And at that point, their technique's so different. There's no pull on the handle. It's coming around them so much that that club can be 3 degrees flat and their gap wedge can be standard. It doesn't matter because they're like, I'm not hitting this over 60 yards ever.
Yeah.
So that's the other stuff that goes on out there.
Yeah.
So interesting. I mean, it's just so crazy to kind of walk through the tour truck and just see all of the, little tweaks happening. I mean, a big event, people really excited about making sure everything's perfect. And then again, you switch next week to a totally different golf course with totally different conditions and everything changes. And much like how a player preps, you guys have to do the same. So it's very, very cool to see this.
That is definitely probably what causes the most work in the trailers. We're playing up here in Rochester, New York. It's going to be 50 to 70 degrees. We have, primarily, I think that's ryegrass, Kentucky bluegrass rough.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go play on Bermuda grass in Texas and it's going to be 90 degrees.
Right.
You're going to need something completely different for some shots. So that's probably primarily our work is dealing in with that. That differences of the changing stuff.
Well, very cool to see the truck. Thank you so much for all the information and just to take it all in. I mean, I even got a new hat out of it, Marty. This is a really good deal
for
me.
Score.
I'm here.
Maybe get you some new grips.
Oh, there you go.